Introduction. The heart is a hollow muscle with the primary function of pumping blood around the body. When the heart beats or contracts, the blood is pushed into the vessels that deliver the body with blood. Between each stroke, the heart refills with blood, which is ejected again. At rest, your blood volume passes through the heart once per minute. During an average lifespan, the heart contracts between 2.5 to 3 billion times. In many ways, it may be illogical to study the cardiac function without simultaneously examining the body's blood vessels and their functions, circulatory physiology. These two systems, the heart and circulation, are both anatomically and physiologically connected, and together we call them the cardiovascular system. For clarity, we nevertheless present these two systems separately. Heart anatomy. The heart is a muscle. It is classified as a separate tissue under the muscle tissue category. This is because the heart muscle has distinctive features compared to skeletal muscle and smooth muscle, both histologically and physiologically. Learning outcomes. After studying the heart anatomy, you should be able to describe the location of the heart within the thorax. Describe the organization and function of the pericardium. Describe the structure of the heart wall. Account for the structures of the cardiac chambers and the functional characteristics of these. Explain the function of the foramen ovale. Account for the cardiac valves, including names, location, and function. Account for the blood transport through the heart, including Latin names of connecting arteries and veins. Describe the location and function of the coronary blood vessels. The heart weighs between 250 to 350 grams and is approximately the size of a clenched fist. The heart is located in the thorax, partially protected behind the sternum. The heart's tip or apex faces the left of the thorax, which is probably the reason why the heart's location is often described as lying on the left side of the chest. Within the thorax, the heart is located in a separate cavity, the pericardium. The pericardium is a double-walled sac that encloses the heart and consists of two membranes, the outer fibrous pericardium and the inner serous pericardium, which covers the heart muscle. The fibrous pericardium is a powerful and dense connective tissue membrane. It protects the heart against external forces, attaches the heart to its surroundings, and prevents overfilling of the heart. The serous pericardium is a tight bag that encloses the heart. It consists of two layers, the visceral layer that is attached directly to the outer heart muscle and the parietal layer that is attached to the fibrous pericardium. These two layers form a cavity containing pericardial fluid. This fluid serves as a lubricant between the parietal and visceral membrane. When the heart is contracting, it is contracting smoothly, and this is because of the low friction between the layers. Sometimes after heart surgery, trauma, general surgery or infection, pericarditis, too much pericardial fluid can build up. This may need to be drained in order not to impair the heart's movement. The heart wall. The heart wall consists of three layers, epicardium, myocardium and endocardium. The epicardium, the outer membrane of the heart, is the same as the visceral layer of the serous pericardium. The myocardium, which is beneath the epicardium, is the actual heart muscle. The endocardium is the membrane that lines the inside of the heart. This layer also lines the inner layer of the blood vessels, endothelium. Thus, the blood is transported in a continuous channel through the cardiovascular system. The heart chambers, internal structures, and associated blood vessels. The heart has four chambers that contract and thereby pump blood to the next chamber or blood vessel. The heart has two atria and two ventricles. Blood entering the heart always arrives at the atria, and blood that leaves the heart always departs from the ventricles. The left atrium pumps blood to the left ventricle, and the right atrium pumps blood to the right ventricle. The heart is always pictured from the owner's perspective. The atria are small and have a relatively thin muscle wall surrounding the chambers. Ventricles, however, are relatively large and have a thicker muscular wall. The left ventricle has a thicker muscle wall than the right ventricle. Ventricles constitute a larger volume than the atria. The atria are made up of smooth muscle. However, specialised cells that originate in the right atrium rapidly transmit electrical impulses throughout both atria, leading to the coordinated contraction of both chambers, pumping blood into the ventricles. The atria pump blood into each ventricle, and the ventricle pumps blood into their connecting blood vessels. The atria contribute relatively little with respect to the actual pumping. This is because 60 to 75% of the blood entering the atria flows directly into the ventricles. During the contraction, the atria thus contribute only the last remnants of blood into the ventricles. Meaning if the atria were to cease coordinated contraction, the heart would still be able to maintain relatively good blood transport through the blood vessels. This is demonstrated by people living with atrial fibrillation. The ventricles pump blood either to the lungs from the right ventricle or around the whole body, left ventricle. This explains why the left ventricle has a much thicker muscle wall than the right ventricle. Much more power is required to create the pressure that pushes blood to the whole body, in contrast to the short distance to the lungs. Heart valves. The heart has four heart valves. The tricuspid valve lies between the right atrium and right ventricle. The mitral valve, bicuspid valve, is located between the left atrium and the left ventricle. The pulmonary valve is located at the transition between the right ventricle and its connecting artery, the pulmonary trunk. The aortic valve is located at the transition between the left ventricle and the aorta. Heart valves prevent blood from flowing in the wrong direction when the heart is contracting. As the ventricles contract from the apex upwards, known as systole, and the pressure inside them increases, the valves between the atria and the ventricles, atrioventricular valves, are forced shut, preventing backflow of blood, known as regurgitation, into the atria. Simultaneously, the pulmonary and aortic valves between the ventricles and blood vessels open. The blood is pushed from the heart and into the pulmonary and systemic circulation. When the heart relaxes, known as diastole, negative pressure in the ventricles draws blood back from the circulation, filling the atria. The negative pressure forces the closure of the aortic and pulmonary valves, preventing regurgitation of blood into the ventricles. The closing of the valves happens quite quickly, and it occurs at a high pressure. When we hear the heartbeat, we hear the sound of valves shutting. We know that when we listen to the heart, we hear two sounds, one after the other, lub-dub. Then a short pause, and then again two sounds. The first of the two sounds you hear is when valves between atria and ventricles close, and the other sound comes from when valves between the ventricles and blood vessels close. The ventricles contain small papillary muscles that attach to the atrioventricular valves. They prevent the valves inverting during systole. Blood transport through the heart. In order to form a picture of how the blood is transported through the heart and body in general, it is important to know the name and function of several of the body's blood vessels. There are three main types of blood vessel. Arteries. These lead blood away from the heart to the body's various tissues. Veins. These lead blood from the body's various tissues to the heart. Capillaries. These lie within the body's various tissues, and they are the link between arteries and veins. The blood returning to the heart from the body's tissues arrive via the inferior and superior vena cava, respectively, into the right atrium. From the right atrium, blood goes to the right ventricle. When the heart is contracting, this blood is forced through the pulmonary trunk to the lungs. In the lungs, the blood disposes of carbon dioxide and takes up oxygen. See details in the Respiratory Physiology e-compendium. From the lungs, blood returns to the left atrium through the four pulmonary veins, two from the left and two from the right lung. From the left atrium, the blood flows to the left ventricle. From the left ventricle, blood is pumped out through the aorta, or the main artery, to the body. It is important to note that the inferior vena cava returns blood from organs located posterior to the heart, while the superior vena cava returns blood from the organs located above or superior to the heart. Note also that both these veins are collectively referred to as the vena cava. The blood circulation from the heart to the lungs and back to the heart is generally called the pulmonary circulation, while the circulation of the blood from the heart through the aorta to the body's tissues and back via the vena cava is called the systemic circulation. Coronary circulation, the heart's own blood supply. The heart is a hard-working and persistent muscle which, thankfully, does not take breaks. It is essential that the muscle always gets the nutrients and oxygen it needs and therefore has a dedicated blood vessel system. This is called the coronary circulation. Coronary arteries originate at the root of the aorta and extend over the heart. From the root of the aorta, we have two arteries that supply the heart, the left coronary artery and the right coronary artery. The left coronary artery splits and goes around the heart muscle to the posterior side, mainly supplying the left side of the heart. The right coronary artery supplies the right side of the heart and a small portion of the left. During a myocardial infarction, it is often the artery on the anterior side, ramus intraventricularis anterior, which is blocked, but other coronary arteries may also become clogged and infarct other parts of the heart. If arteries in the coronary circulation become narrowed or blocked, the heart muscle can be starved of the oxygen it requires. When this leads to muscle damage, it is known as a myocardial infarction or heart attack. The veins follow the arteries. This means they lie parallel to the arteries and are drained directly into the right atrium. Blood circulation before birth. In the wall between the right and left atrium, we may find a scar, fossa ovalis, in adults. This scar is a remnant of the foramen ovale, which is a duct between the atria present before birth. This duct directed blood directly from the right to left atrium to bypass the pulmonary circulation and the lungs. A developing fetus obtains its oxygen supply from the placenta and therefore does not require a pulmonary circulation for oxygenation. In addition to the foramen ovale, an additional duct, the ductus arteriosus, is patent in the fetal circulation. This short vein connects the pulmonary vein to the aorta, leading blood that is on its way to the lungs directly into the aorta and the systemic circulation. Normally, these ducts close shortly after birth. Summary. The heart is a hollow muscle located in the pericardial cavities within the thorax. The heart consists of four chambers, the right and left atrium and the left and right ventricle. Blood returning to the heart from the peripheral organs arrives via the vena cava to the right atrium first. From here, most of the blood flows directly through the tricuspid valve into the right ventricle. When the heart is contracting, the tricuspid valve prevents that blood regurgitating into the right atrium. Instead, blood is squeezed through the pulmonary valve and into the pulmonary trunk to the lungs, where the blood takes up oxygen and releases carbon dioxide. The blood returns to the heart via four pulmonary veins to the left atrium. Blood flows through the mitral valve into the left ventricle, the heart chamber with the thickest muscle wall. When the heart contracts, blood is pushed through the aortic valve into the aorta. From here, the blood is delivered to all the body's organs, including the heart muscle itself, through the coronary circulation. The heart physiology. Heart physiology is the understanding of how the electrical conduction pathways of the heart lead to the contraction of the heart muscle, and how these are regulated to maintain the volume of blood pumped out of the heart every minute, known as cardiac output. Before you start studying cardiac physiology, it would be useful to familiarize yourself with the topics of ion channels, membrane potential, resting potential depolarization, nerve cell action potential, and skeletal muscle contraction. Learning outcomes. After studying the topic of cardiac physiology, you should be able to describe the characteristic structure of cardiac muscle cells, describe the heart's electrical wiring and various types of pacemaker cell location and rhythm, explain how the pacemaker cells work, explain cardiac contraction and the role of calcium to provide a sustained depolarization and the physiological consequences of this. Describe the nervous system regulation of the cardiac contraction. Simply describe an ECG, what a normal ECG says and what one can read from it. Explain the terms diastole, systole, end-diastolic volume, systolic volume, stroke volume, cardiac output, and apply these terms together. The heart muscle cells. The muscle cells in the heart share several similarities with muscle fibres in skeletal muscles. Note that in skeletal muscles, the long muscle cells are called muscle fibres, while in the heart they are called cells. As with skeletal muscle fibres, the heart muscle cells have sarcomeres, myofilaments, and the sliding actin and myosin filaments. Actin and myosin are the proteins which are responsible for the contraction of muscle when myosin filaments slide along the actin filaments, secondary to increases in calcium and ATP concentrations. In contrast to skeletal muscles, cardiac cells are not elongated. The short cardiac muscle cells are branched. The cardiac contraction follows a pattern where it begins with the atria and spreads through the ventricles in a specific pattern through the hollow muscle organ. This is achieved with the branched muscle cells. It is also important to note that the various short muscle cells are connected to each other. They communicate with each other through the cell membrane's pores, gap junctions, that transmit electrical current between neighbouring cells. The depolarization leads to muscle contraction starting at one end of the myocardium. The electrical current and contraction spread from muscle cell to muscle cell throughout the heart. This makes the heart contract as a coordinated unit. Myofibrils. Each muscle cell contains myofibrils, and each myofibril is composed of hundreds of protein strands, the myofilaments. There are two types of myofilaments: myosin filaments, thick filament; actin filaments, thin filaments. Each myofibril consists of a large number of sarcomeres, the muscle cell's smallest functional units. Each sarcomere consists of a Z-disc in each end and an A-band in the middle. Actin filaments attach to the Z-discs and myosin filaments form the A-band. It is the repetitive A-bands that give the characteristic transverse muscle strips seen under the microscope. Actin and myosin filaments are organized so every myosin filament is surrounded by six actin filaments. The muscle contraction is a result of myosin filaments climbing on actin filaments in each sarcomere. The actin filaments comprise of several spherical proteins in long helical chains. They consist of the proteins actin, tropomyosin, and a troponin complex. All these are essential for muscle contraction. The myosin filaments are an accumulation of approximately 300 elongated myosin molecules. Each of these proteins has a head on one end. The myosin head's function is to bind and slide on the actin filaments that lie parallel. As shown in Figure 7, the myosin filaments are organized so that when they slide against the surrounding actin filaments, they draw each end of the sarcomere towards the other. i.e. the Z-discs are drawn towards each other and the distance between the two Z-discs is shortened. Distance reduction between two Z-discs is minimal. However, a myofibril consists of numerous sarcomeres in a chain which shortens simultaneously. Thus, the whole myofibril contracts. As this happens in all myofibrils in a muscle cell at the same time, the whole muscle cell contracts, and we get a coordinated contraction, cell by cell. Inside the muscle cells, there is a membrane which encloses the various myofibrils. This membrane is called the sarcoplasmic reticulum. The main function of this membrane system in the heart is to store and release calcium ions into the sarcoplasm, corresponding to the cytoplasm in other cells. Thus, the calcium becomes available for the actin and myosin. Other membranes inside the muscle cell are known as T-tubules. T-tubules are tunnels of sarcolemma, cell membrane, that fold in and meander around every single myofibril. In the figure, you can see that they meander around the sarcomere myofibril Z-discs. T-tubules adjoin the sarcoplasmic reticulum. These T-tubules lead to the electrical impulses, action potentials, in each sarcomere in a muscle cell. See explanation below. The muscle cells in the heart have more mitochondria than those found in skeletal muscles. 25 to 35% of the volume of the cardiac muscle cells is mitochondria, explaining the high cardiac endurance. There is a lot of energy available and it requires significant strain on a normal heart to produce lactic acid. Lactic acid is produced when the oxygen requirement of the muscle outstrips its supply and the cells are forced to produce energy without oxygen, known as anaerobic respiration. With numerous mitochondria, the cells can produce high amounts of ATP in the presence of oxygen, known as aerobic respiration, leading to high endurance. The heart's contraction. The heart's contraction is initiated by an electrical signal that originates in the right atrium at the sinoatrial node. From here, the electrical conduction spreads through the atria through specialized conduction cells, causing depolarization of the heart muscle and atrial contraction. The electrical impulse reaches the atrioventricular node, located at the bottom of the atria. The electrical impulse is delayed at the AV node to allow the ventricles to fill with blood. From the AV node, the electrical impulse propagates down the bundle of His, penetrating the muscular wall of the ventricles. This divides into two branches called Purkinje fibers, supplying each ventricle. The electrical impulse will run along this network and throughout the muscle wall, and by depolarizing the tissue, initiates the contraction of the ventricles from the bottom up. One of the heart's most distinctive features is that it does not need external stimuli for contraction. We say that the heart is self-excitable, so if it is removed from the body, it will continue to beat until it runs out of energy, ATP. That is, it self-generates its own electrical impulses. This feature is maintained by the pacemaker cells. The sinus node, AV node, bundle of His and Purkinje fibers are all pacemaker cells. Pacemaker cells. Pacemaker cells are cells that generate electrical impulses, action potential, by themselves. The impulses are generated with a certain rhythm, creating the heart pulse. Thus, in contrast to neurons and other muscle cells, the pacemaker cells need no external stimuli to depolarize. If the spinal cord is damaged in the upper cervical region, mechanical help may be needed to keep the lungs oxygenated. Yet the patient's heart may keep beating without external stimulus. The nervous system does not need to trigger the cardiac contraction. The nervous system regulates the heart's rhythm and contractility. One of the characteristic features of pacemaker cells is that they have specialized ion channels in the cell membrane, which continuously and slowly leak sodium ions. Sodium diffuses slowly into the cell, leading to a slow increase in the membrane potential. As a consequence, at a particular limit, the threshold for spontaneous ion channel opening is reached. What distinguishes this depolarization from what we know in nerve cells and skeletal muscle fibers is that when the threshold is reached, it is calcium ion channels that open. Almost immediately, calcium ions diffuse into the pacemaker cells and depolarize them, creating an electrical impulse. Depolarization terminates when the calcium channels close and potassium channels open. When enough potassium ions have leaked out of the cell, the membrane potential is normalized back to its resting potential. It is a relatively short-lived resting potential because sodium is leaking into the cells to further generate a new spontaneous depolarization and electrical impulse. We therefore get a rhythmic depolarization of pacemaker cells, which provide rhythmic contractions and a pulse. Note that the various pacemaker cells in the heart have different depolarization rates. This means that they will promote or initiate contraction at different frequencies, different number of contractions per minute. Pacemaker cells in the sinus node depolarize approximately 75 to 100 times per minute. The AV node cells depolarize approximately 50 times per minute, while the bundle of His and Purkinje fibers depolarize approximately 30 times per minute. As long as the sinus node is intact, this will determine the rhythm of the heart, because when the sinus node initiates an impulse, it depolarizes the entire heart muscle, including the other pacemaker cells. Pacemaker cells with the highest frequency will therefore determine the rate of cardiac contraction. Should the sinus node for any reason cease to function, it will be the AV node that takes control of the heart rate. Should the atria totally stop working, the heart will still be able to beat because pacemaker cells of the ventricles take over control. However, with a heart rate of 30 beats per minute, the clinical management may be critical in such cases. As mentioned, the pacemaker cells of the sinus node depolarize at a frequency of approximately 75 to 100 per minute. This means that the heart has a heart rate of 75 to 100 beats per minute. However, your normal resting heart rate may be around 50 to 60 beats per minute. The reasoning is that at rest, the heart is under the constant influence of the autonomic nervous system that inhibits the sinus node. The nervous system can modify the pacemaker cells, further described below. Muscle contraction. Depolarization and subsequent muscle contraction of the heart is initiated, as in other muscle types, by generating an electrical impulse. In the heart, this is generated by the pacemaker cells, whereas in skeletal muscles, this depolarization is generated at the neuromuscular junction. Interestingly, the depolarization of the heart takes around 200 milliseconds, which is significantly longer than the 2-millisecond depolarization of the skeletal muscles. The depolarization of pacemaker cells initiates the depolarization of adjacent muscle cells. During the depolarization, sodium channels open and the membrane potential rises from minus 90 millivolts to plus 30 millivolts. Depolarization spreads along the T tubules to the sarcoplasmic reticulum. Consequently, calcium ions are released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum and become available for actin filaments. So far, the regulation of muscle cell contraction is close to identical to contraction of skeletal muscles. Simultaneously with the opening of sodium channels in the heart muscle, slow calcium channels allow calcium from the extracellular space to slowly diffuse into the muscle cells. This calcium triggers further release of calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. In skeletal muscle cells, sodium channels closed instantly after depolarization. But in cardiac muscle cells, depolarization continues after sodium channels have closed. This is because calcium slowly and continuously diffuses into the cells due to the presence of slow calcium channels. The sustained diffusion of calcium into the muscle cell creates a plateau in the action potential, and as long as calcium diffuses in, the depolarization and subsequent contraction persists. Simultaneously, as calcium diffuses into the cells, there is only minimal diffusion of potassium out of the muscle cell. The sum of these two processes of calcium and potassium explain the sustained depolarization of the heart muscle, the plateau. When calcium channels close and potassium channels finally open, the cardiac cell repolarizes. Note from figure 11 that the power of the muscle cells increases during the plateau. This is explained by the persistent depolarization and increased amount of calcium in the cardiac cells. The myofibrils, actin and myosin, have time and enough calcium to form many bonds giving more power. The muscle contraction where myosin slides on actin is identical to skeletal muscle physiology. The following is therefore a brief review of this process. As long as calcium is not available to actin filaments in myofibrils, the heads of myosin cannot bind actin. However, when calcium is released by depolarization, it binds actin filaments in such a manner that the myosin's head point of attachment on actin filaments become available. Thus, myosin attaches to actin. Prior to the binding of actin, the myosin head has bound the energy molecule ATP and cleaved it into ADP and a phosphate group, and ATP has been metabolized. Both ADP and the phosphate group are still attached to myosin while attaching to actin. When myosin binds actin, the phosphate group is released. This causes a change in the myosin's three-dimensional structure, causing the head to bend and the actin filaments move in a longitudinal direction. Then ADP is released. Once this is done, a new ATP will bind the myosin molecule, releasing its connection to actin. ATP is cleaved to ADP in a phosphate group and the myosin head achieves its original three-dimensional structure, restarting the cycle where myosin can bind actin in the presence of calcium. Nervous system regulation of the heart. The heart's contractions are not completely dependent on pacemaker cells. Contractions are regulated by the autonomic nervous system. parasympathetic nerves, the vagus nerve, cranial nerve 10, arises from the medulla oblongata and innervates the sinus node and AV node. Here, the nerve cells release the neurotransmitter substance acetylcholine. When acetylcholine binds its receptor, ion channels for potassium open. Potassium then leaks out of the cells. This means that there must be more leakage of sodium into these pacemaker cells to reach the threshold for spontaneous ion channel opening and depolarization. Consequently, it takes longer for the nerve impulse to be generated and the heart rate slows down. Parasympathetic nerve stimulation lowers the heart rate. This explains why the sinus node depolarization frequency is about 75 to 100 beats per minute, but your resting heart rate is only 50 to 60 beats per minute. Sympathetic nerve stimulation increases the depolarization frequency of the heart. Sympathetic nerves are attached to the myocardium of the sinus node. The neurotransmitter substance from the sympathetic nerves is noradrenaline. Noradrenaline acts on beta-1 receptors in the heart and enables the threshold of the ion channels in the sinus node to be reached more quickly, thus increasing the depolarization frequencies. In other words, the heart rate increases. In addition, sympathetic stimulation elsewhere in the myocardium promotes increased calcium transport into the muscle cells. This provides increased muscle strength or power. This makes the heart able to contract both faster and more powerfully, and consequently the heart can squeeze out more blood per heartbeat. During cardiac arrest, patients may be treated with adrenaline intravenously. Adrenaline mimics sympathetic activity, whereas atropine blocks the parasympathetic stimuli and is used in bradycardic arrhythmias, a slow abnormal rhythm, such as complete heart block, to increase the heart rate. The effect is increased rate of contraction of the heart. Electrocardiography, ECG. Electrocardiography is a methodology for recording electrical impulses in the heart. Electrodes measure the depolarization of the heart and its direction. This can be used to gain a lot of information regarding the distribution of electrical impulses and the problems that may be found there, such as an acute myocardial infarction, current or old, if a patient has ischemic heart disease or the heart is beating in an irregular rhythm, an arrhythmia. We are not going into detail about how all this works, but we'll briefly explain the main characteristics of the ECG. A normal ECG has three different stages. It has a P wave, a QRS complex, and a T wave. Based on this, we get three intervals. A PR interval, the time between the P and R waves. An ST interval, the time between the S and T waves. A QT interval, the time from the Q to the T waves. The P wave describes the electrical impulse that runs through the atria. The QRS complex describes the electrical impulses that run through the ventricles, whereas the T wave describes the repolarization of the ventricles, i.e. when the muscle cells of the ventricle recover to its resting potential. Repolarization of the atria is not shown in the ECG because it occurs while the ventricles are depolarized. The electrical impulses in the ventricles are so much stronger that they drown the impact of the repolarization of the atria. Using this knowledge of an ECG, we can look at some simple examples of what can be read from such a recording. If the atria does not have a coordinated impulse, the muscle cells of the atria all contract independently of each other, causing fibrillation. On an ECG, there will be no discernible P waves and an irregular rhythm due to the random stimulation of the AV node. If the PR interval increases, it indicates that the electrical impulses from the atria to the bundle of His are abnormal, and there is a delay of transmission to the ventricles, i.e. a prolonged delay in the AV node. This is called an incomplete heart block and inhibits the heart's normal activity. In other cases, the P waves and the QRS complexes may be completely independent of each other. This indicates complete heart block, where none of the atrial impulses are transmitted through the AV node to the ventricles. In such cases, it is the pacemaker cells of the ventricles that maintain the pumping of blood. Atrial fibrillation is a condition in which the depolarization of the atria does not follow the normal pattern, but is completely out of control. The atria do not contract synchronously, but rather vibrate without any particular pump power, On an ECG, P waves are absent, and the QRS complex, ventricular contraction, occurs irregularly because the signal transmission to the ventricles does not follow the normal pattern. The AV node will thus receive electrical impulses from the atria randomly because of unsynchronized depolarizations of the atria. Cardiac cycle. The heart's function is a repetitive process. The heart contracts and it rests. It contracts again and then it rests. This is called the cardiac cycle. Figure 16 provides a simple overview of the cardiac cycle and the most characteristic features of this. Important characteristics are heart sounds, ECG, heart valve function, blood volume, and blood pressure. Systole and diastole. When the heart is contracting, it pumps out blood. The blood is forced out to the lungs from the right ventricle and to the rest of the body from the left ventricle. This phase of contraction is called systole. After the heart has contracted and the blood has been squeezed out, the heart muscle relaxes and it expands. During this period, the heart fills with blood. This phase is called diastole. It is these two concepts we use when we measure a person's blood pressure. A normal blood pressure is 120 over 80. We write 120/80. These figures indicate our blood pressure. 120 indicates that the pressure is 120 millimetres of mercury during systole, and 80 indicates that the pressure is 80 millimetres of mercury during diastole. More on this topic is covered in cardiovascular physiology. Ventricular blood pressure. During the cardiac cycle, the pressure in the different chambers varies. When the heart is being filled with blood, it is at relatively low pressure in the heart due to the heart muscle relaxing. The more the heart fills, the higher the pressure in the heart chambers becomes, particularly in the ventricles. When the heart is contracting, the pressure increases further because the heart wall is now pushing against the blood. When the pressure in the ventricles is higher than the blood pressure in the arteries, the blood moves out of the ventricles into the arteries. When the contractions stop and the heart relaxes again, the pressure falls. The low pressure in the heart during diastole contributes to the filling of the heart with blood from the vena cava. In this way, the heart drives blood around the body. It pushes it out during systole and drags it back during diastole. Blood pressure in the atria varies much less than in the ventricles. This is because the blood volume and muscle power of the atria is much lower than in the ventricles, and as previously mentioned, it's because most of the blood flows into the ventricles before the atria contract. Ventricular blood volume, stroke volume, and cardiac output. During diastole, the left ventricle fills with blood, and during systole, this blood is squeezed out the ventricle into the aorta. At the end of systole and beginning of the diastole, there is still blood left in the ventricle. Ventricles are thus not drained entirely. The blood volume of the left ventricle immediately before contraction is called end-diastolic volume, EDV. This will normally be somewhere between 120 to 130 mL. When the heart has contracted at its maximum, we are left with a blood volume in the ventricles we called end-systolic volume, ESV. In a normal resting heart, this blood volume is about 60 to 70 mL. The difference between EDV and ESV is the heart stroke volume, SV, i.e. the actual volume the heart pumps per heartbeat. We write SV equals EDV minus ESV. Both EDV and ESV can be changed. If the sympathetic nervous system kicks in, more blood is ejected. This means that the ESV is lower and consequently increases the SV, given that EDV is constant. Similarly, EDV increases during sympathetic stimulation of the veins by returning more blood to the heart, for example, during physical activity. More blood returning to the heart leads to increased filling of the heart and provides increased EDV. Increased EDV provides increased SV. The amount of blood that the heart pumps out per minute is called the cardiac output. Cardiac output is the stroke volume multiplied by the number of times the heart beats per minute, the heart rate. We write CO equals HR times SV. By sympathetic stimulation, as described above, the heart will thus increase both stroke volume and heart rate, which increases the cardiac output. Summary. The heart's contraction is controlled by pacemaker cells. In a normal heart, there will be cells in the sinus node, right atrium, that control the contraction frequencies. Pacemaker cells here, as elsewhere in the heart, have the property of depolarizing spontaneously. Depolarization occurs because the cell membrane of pacemaker cells contains leaky ion channels for sodium. Sodium enters the cell and the membrane potential slowly approaches the threshold value, triggering the opening of calcium channels and depolarization. An electrical impulse is generated that spreads through the heart's electrical conduction system and into the heart's muscle. Depolarization of muscle cells causes not only sodium channels to open in the cell membrane, but also slow calcium channels. The consequence of this is persistent diffusion of calcium ions into the muscle cells. Here, the calcium ions trigger a release of more calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. The slow calcium transport into the muscle cells and the additional activation by released calcium from internal storage causes depolarization of muscle cells. The large amounts of calcium accumulates within the cells that provide increased muscle strength. The increased strength is due to the function of calcium allowing bonding between myosin and actin filaments. The more bonding between myosin and actin, the more forceful the muscle cell contraction. The autonomic nervous system regulates the heart's contraction. Sympathetic nerves use noradrenaline as a neurotransmitter to stimulate the sinus node, as well as the heart muscle as a whole. Sympathetic stimulation results in increased contraction and increased mobilization of calcium, providing the myocardium with a higher force. The heart is emptied of more blood compared with an unstimulated heart. Parasympathetic nerve cells use acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter and stimulates the sinus node and AV node. Acetylcholine inhibits spontaneous cardiac depolarization, slowing down the heart. The spontaneous depolarization frequency of the sinus node is about 75 to 100 per minute. At rest, your heart is being slowed by parasympathetic nerves, leading to a resting heart rate of around 60 beats per minute. The heart's main function is to pump blood around to all tissues in the body. In order to do this, the heart must create a pressure that pushes blood into the arteries with enough impact so that the transport of blood is appropriate to maintain homeostasis. The heart's contraction creates this pressure. Each time the heart contracts, it pushes around 70 mL of blood into the aorta, equating to approximately 5 to 6 litres of blood per minute. This is a volume equal to the total blood volume of your body. Cardiac output can be regulated by the autonomic nervous system, sympathetic stimulation. ESV will decrease and EDV increase, the latter due to increased venous return. Together, this means that the heart stroke volume, SV, increases. In addition, sympathetic stimulation of the heart increases the heart rate, HR. When both SV and HR increases, cardiac output, CO, increases because CO equals HR times SV. If sympathetic stimulation of the heart decreases and or parasympathetic stimulation increases, heart rate decreases. Stroke volume will fall due to a lower EDV and a higher ESV, leading to a lower cardiac output.